Gators Breakdown, the Gators fan podcast, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. He's joining me for this episode previewing the defensive side of the ball for our spring preview is Nick De La Torre from GatorCountry.com. Nick, thanks for hopping on, man.
Appreciate it. I don't know if I'll have all the stats you had last week, but it'll just be like two friends sitting there talking ball.
Absolutely. That's what this is going to be about. Of course, it's a lot easier to find those quarterback numbers than any other position. So, not as many numbers on this one.
Yeah, that's what everyone wants to talk about anyway. It's quarterback. I see Twitter's fighting today about quarterback again.
It never stops. So, you're getting away from baseball for a little while.
Yeah, well, back to the field tomorrow, Florida State. So that's a big one. It's like rivalry week because then Georgia comes in after that. So that's a big week for Gator fans.
Yeah, we'll talk baseball just for a second. What? So number one, Florida, sure. And then what? Number two, Georgia, right? Georgia's number two.
I honestly didn't even check to see the D1 baseball's new standings, but they're good. Georgia's a really good team. Friday night will be big. Emerson Hancock for Georgia, their starter. He's a guy that puts up triple digits on the radar gun, and Tommy Mace. So that's, that's, you talk about it all the time, but Friday night in the SEC, you're facing guys that are, big league arms, and that's certainly true this week. But I think it'll be a nice little beat down of Florida State. Florida's won, what is this? I had the stat pulled up and I was writing my preview for it. Let me pull it up real quick. They've owned FSU, and it's like to the point where you wonder when or if it'll ever stop. But they've won 11 in a row, 16 of the last 17, and they've swept the last four regular season series. The only win FSU has over Florida in the last 17 games was one time in a region or in a super regional, which they ended up losing two of three and getting bounced out of the tournament anyway.
So, guys, of course, football on Gators Breakdown is where it's at. But if you're doing yourself a disservice, you don't follow Nick for all the baseball coverage out there. I know the basketball team's been disappointing, but the baseball team out there, 16-0, right, Nick? 16?
16-0. Yeah. And the school record, so that's already the school record to start a season. And the record for any point of the season is 18. So they're, quickly approaching the school record for consecutive wins.
Yeah, so 18 with the schedule coming up this week would be awesome. So
yeah.
All right. So yeah, of course. Football talk coming up right here on Gators Breakdown. Thanks for Nick for hopping on for this episode. But before we get there, remember you can find Gators Breakdown on news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. You'll find all the past episodes there. If you missed our offensive preview last week, Will Miles and I broke down the offense and really dove into Kyle Trask, quarterback battle, all that good stuff there. So you can go check that out at news4jax.com or all the popular podcast platforms out there, and follow us on social media on Twitter and Facebook at Gators Breakdown. And as a reminder, come see me for a speaking engagement for the Fighting Gators Touchdown Club in Gainesville on April 23rd, right after the spring game on April 18th. So we'll have plenty to talk about after spring practice kicks off next Monday, and then the spring game on April 18th, and the speaking engagement there in Gainesville April 23rd. So all right, some questions sent our way to talk this defensive side of the ball. And we'll start right here from a friend of the podcast, Trey Moose 66. Nick, Trey, he was actually with us in Atlanta after the Peach Bowl. So we that was a fun time back
then. Okay.
Back, yeah.
Those times get get fuzzy.
Oh, man. Yeah. After about 9 o'clock that night, it was completely fuzzy.
I thought you're a bad influence. I'm sticking to it. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Oh man, yeah. Every time we have a good time when we get together. So Trey Moose says, with no clear cut first rounder yet established, what one to two guys will step up and become the alpha dogs on the field? I think the defense will be solid. Just not sure who the dudes will be. And kind of along the same line here from Georgia Gator at JWinB1984. Who has the potential to be game changers on defense? And one more along the same lines from Pulling Guard 79. Where does Diabate play? Buck Grantham has mentioned he thinks inside linebacker could be his best position, but I love him coming off the edge. And the reason I threw that last one in there, because that's where I'm going to start, Nick, as far as a potential game changer on defense. Pulling guard mentions Diabate's versatility, and that's one reason I see him as a potential game changer here. He can come off the edge. We got a glimpse of that. The best it could be in that Vanderbilt game and other times during the season. And Florida has some options at that strong side defensive end position where they garner attention with guys like Zach Carter, Brenton Cox. He'll take some snaps there as well. Jeremiah Moon, a lot of snaps at Buck. You've got Diabate to push for snaps there as well, but athletic, very, very smart player, leadership qualities to him as well. So I think it'd be hard to keep him off the field. We've seen Todd Grantham get the most out of guys like Ja'Kai Polite, Jabari Zuniga, Jonathan Grenard, and I think Diabate's next in line. He can be moved around, Buck, star, linebacker, and I can see you get that point sometimes where you might be too versatile and really need to concentrate on a specialty or one, two positions, but it gets him on the field. He's going to be hard to keep off the field just because of that. 21 quarterback pressures last season was only second to Grenard in his limited stats. So with his skill set, I think there's ways to hide and disguise him next season where he just becomes an absolute playmaker out there.
Yeah, spring's always interesting because you might see guys not playing where you expect them to, and because it's just a time you're not game planning for anyone. So it's a time to, like you said, get a guy more tools in his tool belt. And I was almost caught off guard when Dan Mullen was asked about middle linebacker and replacing David Reese when he brought up Diabate, because I thought, like you just said, with those stats, like that's a guy that you can get quarterback pressures with. And that's the biggest thing in Todd Grantham's defense is affecting the quarterback. He's someone who can do it. And just putting him at middle linebacker, you're kind of taking that away from his game. But he's super, super athletic, can definitely run, would give you a different kind of linebacker, probably a linebacker that does – maybe Alex Anzalone would have that similar kind of athleticism, but I don't think we've seen, a linebacker like him maybe since then. And to me, it'll be interesting because of the guys you mentioned at that Buck position. And we won't see Moon in the spring as he keeps coming back from that injury, but Brenton Cox is the guy I asked about today, former five-star Georgia guy. He's there, and maybe it's just a way to say, hey, Mahmoud, we need to figure out other ways to get you on the field with Brenton Cox. And if he's at Buck or if he's at strong side defensive end, and we got to get Zach Carter on the field, and Andrew Chatfield's going to be a guy that I think is factoring as well. So there's a lot of guys, and those guys don't have the same versatility that Mahmoud does. So maybe that's why you start to see him, especially in the spring. Hey, let's see if you can get middle linebacker. Or where else can we get you? Because we want to get our best 11 on the field. And if you're a guy that can play, sure, you can go and get after the quarterback. We saw that. But if we can put you at Mike and you can cover a little bit and you can run fit, and that might be the way that we get our best 11 on the field, not taking away anything from, guys like James Houston and Ventrell Miller. I think they'll continue to play, and they're probably more prototypical Mike linebackers. But – I think the ceiling is there is no ceiling for Mahmoud. So like I said, just try to find any way to get him on the field.
Yeah. Toward the end, what you said there, if you stick him at Mike, then he'd just be replacing who was already a great leader in David Reese. And I think that's one thing this defense will miss a little bit till they identify, what kind of trade, who's the alpha dogs, who's the leaders on this defense. Diabate, he has that leadership quality. When he was getting recruited, I was like, yeah, that's the, his type of demeanor is a guy I'd like out there. But even you said run fit, pass fits. Ideally, I think, with his athleticism, he can keep up with running backs out of the backfield, maybe a tight end out there as well. But, he may be better suited if, they're playing more of a passing team until he gets that. Because he was a little undersized last year, I think, if you're going to slide him into that inside linebacker role. But now another strength and conditioning offseason, maybe he's put that weight on. And like as you said, they can fill in there and be that leader at that Mike spot.
Well, as a freshman, they're really just trying to put as little on your plate as possible. So he was really only in on passing downs at Buck. There were a little bit of responsibilities for him in terms of covering the flats. But if you're moving to Mike, we're talking about, hey, depending on what the offense comes out in, you might be one-on-one with a tight end. and one-on-one with someone's, and athleticism will get you some places, but there's still a lot of, you know, learning footwork and routes, and there's a lot of stuff that comes with that. And I think that's probably why you, maybe if we do see him there a lot in the spring, that's why you try to do it now. Kind of like Kyle Pitts when his first spring, and it was, hey, did they move him to wide receiver? Well, he's only working with wide receivers. It was no, it's, hey, we're trying to get him to go through and run all these routes and work on blocking outside. And that's how we're going to use him as a freshman. And then as a sophomore, we'll start to use him in other roles. But I, you know, it got to the point where people were saying Kyle Pitts has been moved and he's playing wide receiver now. Like, he's a tight end. He's not a wide receiver, but it's just the spring is the time where you put people in those positions to learn stuff that maybe that you wouldn't ask them to do in the, you know, in fall practice for the first time. This is the right time to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So another dude and another playmaker, and this is the obvious choice right now. That's Kyrie Elam. It's, you know, if you talk about one guy who can show up as that dude, as that alpha dog, I think he's the for sure, surefire pick here of, you know, maybe like another guy who hasn't been picked as that already, as in like Marco Wilson. So you have somebody now on the opposite side. Pro Football Focus provided these stats that show just what Florida was getting in the young cornerback last season and why there's a reason to be excited. Elam was targeted 23 times across his 207 coverage snaps and 11% target rate. So quarterbacks weren't throwing his way all that much. But when they did, he made them pay. So 45 true freshman cornerbacks saw 20-plus targets and had 150-plus coverage snaps in 2019. The leaders in passer rating with targeted, Kyrie Elam was number one at 18.3. So the passer rating there when throwing towards Kyrie Elam, 18.3 under the scenario of 20-plus targets and 150-plus coverage snaps. So already there, proving his worth. And kind of extending that, Pro Football Focus with a lot of stats here when they go back and look at the season. 45 true freshmen as well. Cornerback spent 150-plus snaps in coverage and at least 20 targets their way. And the leaders in forced incompletion percentage, Kyrie came in third in that category behind Tywan Mullen from Indiana, Ahmad Gardner, Cincinnati. So forced incompletion percentage there was 26.1%. Also, lowest completion percentage allowed true freshman cornerbacks of a minimum 20 targets. Kyrie Elam's fourth there. Fewest yards allowed per reception. True freshman cornerbacks here. Kyrie Elam was third in that regard. And SEC East highest graded returning cornerbacks. This is just as a season, Pro Football Focus metric here. SEC's highest rated graded returning cornerbacks. Derek Stingley comes in at 91.9. Kyrie Elam, number two, 87.8. So, Nick, we all remember the Orange Bowl we had. Big interception late when Virginia was driving. Basically stopped their hope of a comeback win. Went up, plucked the ball out of the air with his great size. Played that play exactly like he was supposed to. Went up and made a great play earlier in the game, taking down Virginia's big tight end on the play that looked like it was going for a big gain. Comes in, takes his legs out from under him. He was named SEC Leadership Council this offseason for the Gators. Nick, I think it's safe to assume he is going to be that alpha dog.
Yeah, he's got that. I mean, alpha dog, not to be like a terrible pun guy, but he plays with that dog mentality. Yeah. I mean, he comes from that bloodline. I mean, his dad, Abe, was the same way when he was playing football. Matt Elam, I mean, you remember him almost killing Odell Beckham Jr. in the swamp when they were playing LSU, then telling him to go to sleep. I mean, that's what he grew up around. That's what he knows. That's how he plays football. He was very impressive to me early on. And I think when CJ got hurt and missed some time, he really got thrown into the fire. And a lot of times you might, you know, a freshman, the moment can be too big for him. And listen, as a freshman, you're going to make mistakes and stuff's going to happen. I think it didn't happen that much to Kyrie, but even if you're thrown in and it doesn't work out well for you, just that experience and getting that as a freshman is going to help you so much in your sophomore year. And I mean, the laundry list, the, you know, the CVS receipt length list of stats you just read off for him shows that he was ready for it as a freshman. And I think just getting that experience last year is only going to help him into his sophomore year. And then another one, I think, cause I think Kyrie's kind of getting the pub right now. Yeah. But another one that I'm really excited about and to see his progression is Chester Kimbrough. And I don't think he got as much run as I would have liked to see last year. I mean, it's hard when the guys in front of you are Marco, CJ, and Kair. But I'm really interested to see Kimbrough because I think he's got that same kind of mentality, that same dog in him that Kair does. So I think Florida is just DBU, just keep running it back. And it'll be really interesting to me to see the progression of them. And then I'm sure we'll spend a little time talking about it, but where does Trey Dean go? Because it's not going to be star. So who fills into that star role? Is Kimbrough ready to do that? Is Kair ready to do that? It's a lot. There's a lot that goes into it from a mental standpoint. That's really what Trey Dean struggled with. And that's why when people would ask, why can't Chester do this? Why isn't Kair doing this? I said, that's too much to throw to freshmen. There's so much you have to do. And I think I said early on, like, I think Marco Wilson's the only person in the secondary that could probably handle that and jump into that role. And you saw that as Trey started to struggle, mm-hmm. that was the guy they went to. So to me, it'll be interesting. I don't think you put Marco there full time. Mm-hmm. I think you want him to be on the outside. I think he wants to play on the outside. But you got to figure that position out. It's so important. And I think as good as Chauncey was and as highly as we talked about him, I think maybe we didn't even praise him enough for how well he played in that role until you saw, you know, a player who I think is very good, you know, despite what Twitter might think, how much Trey Dean struggled at that spot. I think maybe we didn't give Chauncey as much praise as we should have.
Yeah, I remember going into the last preseason and Will and I do these kind of superlatives going into the season, and it was who has the biggest shoes to fill. And I picked Trey Dean on that because I, you know, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, what he was able to do. And look, I don't think I probably would have even, and don't get me wrong, he had a heck of a bowl game in that Peach Bowl. I don't know if I would have put him in that category if it wasn't for what he did in that Peach Bowl and what it meant for Florida's victory over Michigan. I mean, don't get me wrong, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, we all, and Nick, I think you and I were basically beside each other when he's throwing up the Seminole head in the crowd in Tallahassee. I mean, you know, just the headline of him, the last regular season game of the season and having a good game and getting Gator Nation excited with the dead Seminole head in the crowd and then going and having that big Peach Bowl game against Michigan. Yeah, it really spoke to, okay, this guy's going to be really hard to replace. And it really, really showed that. And that does segue, as you perfectly segue into it, the next set of questions here. Starting from at Rocketman Howe, who says, who will play star? Will we see a rotation at safety, or will two guys get the majority of the snaps? Where do you see Dean playing? From Colby C3 and from Ryan S., I'll kind of combine their two questions here. Ryan S. at Go Gators for Life says, which guys can we expect to see at linebacker and safety? Also, are Dean and Bernie natural safeties? Should they play there permanently? And to keep it going here and to kind of bounce off Nick from Matthew Watson, what kind of role do you see Chester Kimbrough having this season? So I grouped those questions all together because I think the answers interact with each other so much. I think there are two players here that stand out at star heading in the spring. You've already mentioned Kimbrough. I'll throw Bernie in there too. Bernie's played there before, split some time there last year as well as well as linebacker. In a year where he was injured a bit, I know many expected much bigger things from him last year. And while I think Bernie plays some star, he may play at linebacker just as much, if not more, as I think there may be more of a need for him there because I think that nickel star role would be just fine. Nick, you said you were excited about him. I'm excited about him. I think Chester Kimbrough does get a shot there. Donovan Kaiser of All Gators SI posted this stat last week in an article on Kimbrough. Although he had 11 fewer targets, Kimbrough had a lower completion percentage allowed, 41.7, compared to Elam at 43.5%. So all throughout the 2019 season, and look, Elam was named freshman All-SEC first team after he took over as a starter late in the season. So already mentioned how high we are on Elam, and Kimbrough provided great stats and limited time as well. And since Marco Wilson came back, I see him staying outside as much as possible. And I think part of that is I think it does play out where you can have a lot of confidence in Elam on the other outside spot and Kimbrough getting his time at star with Bernie maybe filling in a little bit there too as well. The spring is so big in determining just how much time I think Kimbrough gets in the fall because I think if he's the guy – they pinpoint and can stay there mostly full time, then that's the best case scenario for this Gator secondary right now. If they want to still have Bernie help some at linebacker or safety, even as well, you know, there needs to be trust in whoever fills that nickel, and that should be Kimbrough. So there was some thought his size may hurt him at 5'11", 172, Nick, but you brought it up, man. He's physical. He plays like a dog as well, and you know, he's got that physical streak for he needed to play at nickel.
I mean, I've seen guys that are 6'2", you know, 215 pounds play like they're 5'10", 140.
Yep.
So it's not about your size. Sure, you love to have it, but it's about how you play. And like you said, he doesn't play to his size. If we're talking just about spring, I'd be very surprised if Marco Wilson played at star.
Oh, yeah.
At all. Because it, like we said about Mahmoud, it's, hey, we're trying to get guys reps at positions that maybe they're not comfortable with yet. And you threw Marco in there during a game last year, handled it fine. So it's like, hey, go back outside. Mm-hmm. Guys like Chester, maybe like you said, it's also a position. It's not just nickel, you know, like,
yeah,
when we would ask Todd Grantham about it, he'd be like, oh, well, Mahmoud can do it. Well, Cedric Brunson can do it. And we're like, those aren't nickel back. And you have to realize it depends on down and distance and yard. You know, it's just, hey, if you're in an obvious run situation, you're getting an extra linebacker there.
That's why I brought up Bernie, too, because I think he plays that role if in more of a heavier set if they had to.
Right. But he's also a guy that, you know, he came into Florida as a safety. He was a high school safety, and then they bulked him up and moved him to linebacker and just kind of got to keep him healthy. And I think Donovan Steiner, people might groan, but Donovan Steiner is going to have one of those starting safety spots until someone takes it. But you got to replace Juwan Taylor, and you got to find someone who's going to be back there. And Brad Stewart's an obvious candidate, but I think, you know, Trey Dean's a guy who will get some looks at safety. Dan Mullen pretty much confirmed that on Monday. And I think there's going to be just a healthy competition at safety. And I don't know if Amari Bernie is a guy that plays there, you know, 30 snaps a game.
Yeah.
But a guy that might be able to play back there, I think Trey Dean would be very good at safety. And that's it. There's a lot of defensive backs. I think that freshman class is going to be maybe even – I know the expectations are high, but I think they're going to be even better than we expect. I'm talking about last year, the rising sophomore class in the defensive backs.
The only name there was Jadon Hill. You need to throw him in.
Yeah. I mean, Hill's the only other guy. And he's coming back from an ACL injury, so we'll see. Maybe he's more healthy, and there's probably a mental aspect that goes into coming back from the injury as well, not just, hey, your knee's fine. Okay, well, do I trust it yet? Because it's such a devastating thing to happen, especially at that age, you know, in high school, to have something like that happen. So there's just a lot of guys for not a lot of spots, but they like to rotate people. So it'll be interesting to me. But I think if I'm game planning, if I'm Todd Grantham and I'm trying to see what is the best fit, like you said, I put Marco on one side, Kyrie on the other, and then I'm trying to mix people in at that star role, mix different linebackers and safeties up. But I think, like you said, I've got Marco and I've got Kyrie on either side, and then we figure it out, you know, in the middle.
Yeah, and safety. Yeah, good luck figuring that one out. I mean, I don't know. If Florida was playing a game tomorrow, Sean Davis and Donovan Steiner, maybe. And Brad Stewart, I mean, after a pretty good 2018, just didn't put it together in 2019. And I can't figure that one out. But, look, they all had their ups and downs last year, making some plays, also giving up big plays way too often. It's just that lack of consistent playmaking that you get that you don't get from there. It's just a lack of consistency from those guys. And, you know, look, and that maybe that Trey Dean does find a home there. Maybe he does go to safety, natural position in high school. That's where he played for whatever reason and just hasn't been able to make the best of the situation here at Florida. 2018 gets thrust out there maybe before he's ready, taking over for Marco and injured Marco Wilson. Moves to Nichols and Star last year, as we said, and it just doesn't happen. So this, if he's going to try safety, it sounds like he will. And when spring practice rolls around next Monday, his third different position in as many years for him. But you know, it's asking a lot for a player to move to another position again, learn that role. But he did play safety in high school and knows the basics of the position, so you don't have to necessarily teach him that part of it. And if he's willing to make the move, then hopefully, you know, he gets a shot here, makes the most out of it. But as we said, this is where time is when next Monday, and that first whistle blows, and they're out there on the field, this is the time to figure it out.
Well, we talked to him. It was Cassie Hill and I actually talked to him for like 25 minutes in the locker room after the Orange Bowl, and he was very self-aware of the year that he had. And he said, you know, hey, we asked him, what do you want to do in the future? He was like, listen, I'll play. And frankly, he was asked last year in the spring to move to safety, and he didn't want to do it. So he didn't do it. And we talked to him after the Orange Bowl. And he said, listen, like, this star just didn't work out for me. He's like, I was just having to think too much, and I'm playing slower than I should be. We asked him where he wants to play. He says, honestly, I would love to play outside, but I'm fine playing safety. And I think that was probably the first time in 2 years that those words had come out of his mouth, because it's a move that he had been asked about and didn't want to make previously. I think until he saw, okay, well, we're going to play you here. And then when he wasn't playing there, well, you can't go back to safety because you didn't learn any of that in the spring, and we haven't seen you play it there. So now you're going to be on the bench, and you're going to come in whenever, you know, the guys that are playing outside need some water. And I think it was a big wake-up call for him. So we'll see. But I think, like you said, natural position, could find a home there. I don't think his 2019 season is indicative of the player that he is. And almost
he's too athletic for that.
He's just almost the guy that, like, I find myself rooting for now because of, like, that's not the player he is. He got roasted all year on social media, and he saw it, and credit to him for not, you know, like, picking fights with fans and stuff like that. But he read it, and he knows that what was being said, and I'm rooting for him to find a home, whether it's at safety or outside. Because I think he is a quality player and just really had a bad year last year.
Maybe you makes that kind of bounce back Chauncey Gardner-Johnson did from that 2017 to 2018 year. So also asked about linebacker here. We've touched on it just a little bit. It'll definitely probably start out James Houston, Ventrell Miller. Mullen even kind of mentioned that in the presser today. But, you know, at points this season, Florida they'll need more athletic options there at some point in the season. That's why I keep bringing up Diabate and Bernie getting time there as well. Those guys still contribute, but, you know, Miller, Houston, I still be big contributors this year. May even still lead the team in tackles if you want to break it down that way. So when they may still lead in pretty much every statistical category in that form when it's all said and done. So the biggest thing there is who replaces the leadership of David Reese I brought up earlier. Can one of those guys be that type of player? You know, overall, I expect players like Kyrie Campbell, Marco Wilson to kind of step up and be those guys, be the leaders on the team in the defense. But is there anyone else behind those guys as we want to label true linebackers? You know, David Reese will be missed in the run game, certainly, but I'm wondering about that leadership experience he provided. Miller was second, you know, on the team last year in tackles and had a great game in the opener versus Miami. You know, honestly, beside that mid-season stretch where the run defense struggled against LSU and South Carolina, he played well, feel comfortable there for the most part. Biggest question, and I kind of brought it up earlier, Amari Bernie, Tyron Hopper, Bernie already discussed, but Hopper just might be the most athletic of the group, a little smaller, hopefully the second season in strength and conditioning, bulk him up some more. But for a guy you want to help in pass coverage from the linebacker spot, much like Bernie, then Hopper is one guy to look out for in making a move this spring and pushing for reps.
Yeah, I mean, All-American kind of guy. I think I saw one of his savage transformation pictures. doesn't look like the 215 that he was listed at last year. Doesn't look like he's that small anymore. That calling 215 small. But yeah, he's a guy that's interesting. There's a lot of guys there, but like you said, I think it starts probably with Miller and Houston. And it's just, it really depends down in distance. And then what are those guys? Cause I mean, we didn't even talk, we'll get to the defensive line, but you still have like Chris Bogle and other guys like that. To me, I would hope that, you know, a guy like Hopper can, maybe Josiah Pierre. I'm really going to be interested in that role because you've got to find, like you said, more athleticism there. Florida got exposed I think everyone knew it. And obviously the opposing coaches knew it. Florida's middle linebackers, you know, even James Houston, they weren't good in pass coverage. And you would see teams shift around to get David Reese on a tight end and take advantage of it. So you got to find more athleticism there. I think Florida has it. Maybe that's why you're talking about Mahmood and Hopper. But to me, I want to see it. And Florida's got the talent, guys in the slot. So I want to see that in the spring. It'll probably be a matchup that I'm watching to see how Florida's linebackers look running in space against the pass.
All right, moving on to the next set of questions here. Justin Wood at Justin Wood on Twitter. Who do we think the standout freshman will be? We'll kind of hit this one later on. I have no idea what the depth chart looks like game one right now, as you can hear, as you can hear Nick and I discussing in the first half of this episode so far. And then Chris Nisi at 912 Gator, of the incoming class of freshman DBs, who has the biggest impact? Big plays, and who do you think ends up playing the most? Kind of hit on that a little bit, but let's see. True freshmen, let's see, pairing these two together, because I think freshmen that are on campus and taking part in spring that have a chance to contribute are in the secondary. So on the defensive side of the ball, Lamar Good's also taking part in spring, but I think he's behind a few players to crack too much into the rotation. So Jahiri Rogers, Ethan Pouncey, I think two players in the secondary that could get some reps, probably both still redshirt candidates on the season, but two guys that can see plenty of reps in the spring. Rogers only has 1 year of playing defensive back, but he's so athletic that it might be hard to keep him off the field. And if that can, you know, translate early on, I think, you know, athleticism, you can't teach that. So we'll see there.
I just don't know. How many players did we just name?
I know.
That we're trying to fit into those spots. So, and I know, you know, the incoming freshman, it's like the new toy on Christmas. And everyone wants to, you play with that one. And then, you know, the toy you got a week ago, so I don't want that anymore. But we just named so many people in the secondary. So like, how can I go out and say, you know, I mean, even as much as I like, you know, like a Jahari Rogers or
Ethan Pouncey is the other one I was going to bring up.
Todd Torrance at safety. Yeah. I mean, as much as I even like those guys, we just named like 12 players for five spots of guys who have already been on campus and been battle tested and played in games and guys who are going through, you know, their third or fourth spring already.
And if anything, we've learned this staff really, really values experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So much.
But the other thing is, though, too, to the freshmen's credit, is that they also rotate guys.
Yep.
Even to the point where you're like, why are you rotating so many players? Did they just substitute a guy in the middle of a play? Can you even do that? they love getting guys time. And, you know, you might only get 15 plays in a game, which means, you know, hey, that means we have like 18 different guys play, 25 guys play on defense.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, it is a luxury, as you said, bringing up so many names and you still wanting freshmen to get some playing time, but it is hard. And speaking of Pouncey, you know, coming off injury, he needs to gain some weight. So, you know, that could hold him back from making an immediate impact this spring because of those two aspects. But he's blazing fast. So eager to see how that plays out. They'll get their chances this spring. You know, Mullen even said today at this presser, his spring presser, feels pretty comfortable, Nick, at going three deep here all across the board. And, you know, that's a testament to his recruiting the last couple of years, getting that talent level up there. And people were asking, you know, about these freshmen there because of that reason there. So that they've recruited really, really well in the defensive backfield. So those guys get some chances this spring. I don't know how much during the summer, but if you or in the fall, if you want to see these guys, and you definitely need to pay attention this spring, maybe one of those guys shows enough and will excite enough to maybe not get the red shirt in the fall, play enough to get enough reps in the fall. But I agree with you, Nick. When you put it all together, it's just, it's tough for a freshman to break out, especially with so many of the red shirt freshmen and sophomores last year that got a lot of playing time.
That DB class was huge last year, and then they all got that experience because they were forced into it. So, yeah. You love to see them get some experience and get their feet wet, but I mean, there's just a lot of guys there, and I mean, unless barring injury, you know, if somebody were to get hurt and go down, I just see. I mean, if we see a lot of a freshman in the fall, they've earned it because I mean, like the guys in front of them, I think the guys in front of them are really quality players. So if I don't see it happening. So what I'm saying is, if we do see it happen, then hey, they've earned it. Kind of like a Kyrie Elam. Like you're talking about a guy at that level, being ready that young and being able to be that good that young. There's just so many guys that in that class. I think it'd be hard for this freshman class in the defensive backfield to get extensive playing time. Not to say that they're all going to redshirt. I think there's just a lot of guys ahead of them right now.
All right.
And of course they are, because, I mean, they haven't done anything yet. They haven't put pads on yet.
Yeah, still a week away from spring practice, and before they we haven't seen many of their pictures.
So. Right.
Last question here, and going to the one group we haven't discussed much about, from Tyler at Star Rock Dunk Top here, says, with so many talented defensive linemen on the roster now, do guys like Chatfield, Summerall, and Humphreys need to contribute this year to not become transfer risk? Hard to see them playing much behind the talented freshmen we brought in and guys who got more playing time than them last year. Another guy I'll bring into this conversation just because of injury last year, Nick, is one David Reese. The other David Reese, who was injured last year. I know the staff was excited. There was a lot of talk of him kind of maybe being that kind of unsung guy going into last year before he got injured. So, look, these guys definitely need to contribute this spring or risk being passed over come in the fall. This would be Chatfield's third year in the program. And with Britton Cox being a versatile piece, sliding between the strong side defensive end and buck position, Chatfield's time at strong side defensive end could see a hit. Ideally, I mean, if he wants some playing time, he needs to carve out a role when Zach Carter slides inside and someone like Brenton Cox is playing buck on a particular play. Then Chatfield can see his role at the strong side defensive end spot and have a chance to make his name there. But look, he'll have to fend off a player like Chris Bogle, who looks like he's taking the next steps off the field right now. He seems to have an edge there right now as the main backup to Carter. As far as Summerall, he was injured last season. Just don't really know a whole heck of a lot as far as his performance. Florida has a lot of guys who fit that role right now. Versatile pieces, like we keep saying, Cox to Diabate, Moon with the experience there. They'll get him back in the fall. David Reese returning from injury, was raved about before he didn't get a chance last year. Good thing is there's many pieces there, versatile depth, can open up spots when they move around.
And where does Reese fit in? Is he a secondary guy? Is he a line? Is he a linebacker? He's a guy that could potentially play star or safety.
He's kind of like another Diabate to me.
Yeah, he's worked at Buck as well. I mean, I'm really tough injury history for him of late. But, yeah, like you said, I didn't hear the name of who asked the question, but I never want to – put guys, you know, on transfer watch. I don't want to, you know, put them on blast like that. But there are some guys like he said that, you know, need to answer the call. And I think this spring is the time where they are either going to answer it or they're going to get passed up. And after spring football, you see a wave of transfers where people, you know, start to see the writing on the wall, and it's, oh, I thought this was my year. This is clearly not my year here. And you start to see some, you know, the waiver wires start to heat up. So certainly there's going to be a bunch of players on Florida's roster, I think, that will fit that mold. And you'll have to see it play out. But there's so many guys, as you said, it's almost like a log jam, especially at that buck, that even strong side defensive, either defensive end position, buck. And there's kind of a log jam there. It's not a bad problem to have if you're a coach. You'd rather have more talented players than not have enough.
Yeah, and the other last one he brought up, more of an inside guy, Humphreys is another that he'll be battling back after getting injured. But, you know, he's a redshirt freshman. He'll be stuck behind Kyrie Campbell. Elijah Conliff returns from injury as well from last year. He's another. Conliff is one guy because of his tough injury luck last year. I think it was more concussions, right, Nick, is what we heard.
Conliff had surgery.
Oh, okay.
Conlon got hurt. I think it was.
Well, I remember because Mullen was having his like Thursday night radio show. I remember saying he was going to be out for the year, and I remember you asked me about it because I was listening to it on the TuneIn app.
Yeah.
So I remember I sent it, but yeah, I don't think we ever really heard clear what was the issue.
Yeah, like I think he tore his ACL. It was either his ACL or his.
Yeah, I'll have to go back Twitter
and ankle. Yeah, he had surgery and he missed the year with the surgery. He was one I put him and TJ Slayton kind of like on put up or shut up last year. And I think Slayton was shutting up for most of the beginning of the year and then kind of showed up. And I think you just the biggest thing with him is keeping him motivated and keeping him focused.
Got a lot of love at late last season.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's the light bulb.
The Bam Bam Bros, him, Conley, and Zach Carter. And I mean, Zach Carter looks like one of the Monstars from Space Jam. And there's a lot of guys there. But like you said, I think Conley, I think he's back. It's on us. We didn't ask about him today. But Jalen Humphries, I never expected him to play last year coming off of his ACL injury. Like you said, I mean, you're not going to keep some of these guys off the field. You're not keeping, Kyrie Campbell off the field. I think you're not keeping TJ Slayton off the field. So where do those guys kind of fit in with Marlon Dunlap and the incoming freshman as well?
Right. A lot of those guys, like I said, especially Kyrie Campbell and Dunlap, just too much experience and too much, I think coaches like those guys.
I'm excited to see Lamar Goods inside as well. And then Antoine Powell looks like he's put on 45 pounds since he got on campus.
That's just spring. We're not even talking about, Jervon Dexter showing up. Yeah. The question from Tyler is a legitimate one. Those guys have to show up this spring because Florida's got a lot of trench talent coming in.
There's a reason why you see like the wave of transfer portals after spring is because, hey, I thought something was going to happen, and then you really get to see it. And especially with how many kids early enroll nowadays. So you go from, all right, well, so-and-so left, and he left, and he left, so I've got to be next up on the depth chart. And all of a sudden this monster comes in from high school and passes you up in the first week of spring, and you're thinking, all right, well, this is not my year here.
All right. So that was it for our defensive preview here. Thanks for everybody who sent their questions in the last couple of weeks. Offensive side last week, defensive side this week. Nick, you were there, Dan Mullen's opening spring press conference there a week before spring practice starts. A couple highlights here, quotes, of course, on the quarterback battle, talking with about Kyle Trask. Quote, better push himself and continue to work every day and compete at the highest level so that he can remain starter. Of course, everybody takes that as a quarterback battle heading into spring, that it's a wide open battle. But there was only one quarterback talking to the media today. So if you want that to let it tip the cap of Mullen, there you go.
There's only going to be one quarterback in Atlanta when they go for SC media days. And he said the same thing about Felipe and Kyle last year, and there was no quarterback battle last year. It was, hey, man, like, you can say whatever you want. That's why we hit him. We hit him with the hard journalism today. So, yeah, every position's on the line, kicker. He goes, yeah, it's on the line. He goes, I don't know if it's actually on the line.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it. I mean, there's a made-up battle out there. I think it's going to be Kyle Trask. I think most people know that, of course, and go with that. There is a contingent out there of people wanting Emory to start. And look, ultimately, it will happen if it's destined to be that way. Another one that really I retweeted it from you today, Nick. One that really caught my eye here. Malik Davis. And Mullen saying he's excited to see Malik Davis. Says he doesn't think Davis was 100% healthy or mentally healthy last year as far as trusting himself because of the previous injuries. And, I mean, hopefully that's the case. We were all excited for the short amount of time we got to see him in a downtrodden 2017. And he was one of the long bright spots we could keep pointing to in that 2017 year when everything was going so wrong. Even before he was injured, okay, there's one guy who has some playmaking ability, and just because of injuries and maybe trying to get over those injuries, we just haven't seen it again.
Yeah, especially with a back like him, and he's stopping a dime and move and cut and shifty guy to be able to go back out there in pads with 11 guys trying to hurt you and trying to tackle you and to plant and put all your weight when you're running full speed on that knee again. And do you really trust it? And it's interesting. I mean, I think we all knew last year going into it that Michael Pirine was going to be the bell cow. When you look at it now, you've got Lorenzo Lingard, who will be filing a waiver to try to be eligible, but he'll be able to participate in the spring. You've got Pierce and then Davis, and then Clement, kind of fills in if we're talking about guys that might be looking for new homes at the end of spring. But
Naquan Wright?
Yeah, Naquan Wright. It's a loaded backfield again.
And potentially Zach Evans.
I don't know. I don't know.
Potentially.
I'm not, you said it, not me. His mentions. He's at SEC Dave. I heard Gators Dave. I got it wrong. I don't know where he fits in. They don't really have. And Mullen was talking when he was talking about the running backs. Talked about P. Ryan has kind of played to their strengths last year, and they couldn't run the ball. The offensive line couldn't get that kind of push. So P. Ryan was able to catch the ball, and they used him that way. I don't think they have a running back that is that same kind of pass catcher, but you hope that your offensive line is better this year. So maybe you can run the ball and do other things. So that's certainly a battle. Hey, we're not talking about quarterback battle, but we just listed off like six running backs. And I have no idea who will take the first snap in 2020.
Yeah. I mean, look, just six running backs, all the names we just listed on the defensive side of the ball.
Thank God you didn't ask me to give you like a depth chart. I have no idea.
No, it is, you can't. I mean, just, and as Mullen said, they do have a chance right now of being just three deep across the board and feeling pretty comfortable about it there. One more thing from the presser today. You guys talking to Kyle Pitts up to 246 after playing at 235 last year. Man, that's a scary proposition for opposing defenses.
Yeah, and we'll see what Tim Brewster is able to do because he's not just a recruiter. He's coached some really good tight ends as well. To me, Pitts, it's the sky. There is no limit for him when it comes to athleticism and being a pass catcher. I just want to see him like round his game out.
Yeah.
So that you're not only so that you can put him on the line and it's not like okay, hey, he's going to be running out. Like, you can put him on the line, you can run behind him. I think that's the next step in his Pokemon evolution is to be able to sit there with three fingers in the ground, in a 3-point stance and fire off the line and punch somebody in the mouth and be a lead blocker in that way. Cause we already know what kind of mismatch he is on offense.
Yep. Yep. Quickly, Nick, we'll wrap up here. Quick recruiting update. Of course, big junior day was a hit for the Gators. Got a tight end commitment out of it while we're on tight end. Nick Elksness commits to Florida, 3-star rated, 380th best player in the country, one expected to rise 6'6", 220 from Episcopal High School here in Jacksonville. Good to see the Gators get a 904 kid. Former Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback Mark Brunell, he's the head coach at Episcopal and works with me at WJXT News for Jax, had this to say. Nick's success in the classroom and on the football field makes us all at Episcopal very proud. He's a hard worker, he's a leader, and he's coachable. I'm sure he'll do very well at UF. Justin Barney, who covers high school football here in Jacksonville, has covered it for years. Had this to say about Elksness. Great get for Florida at Episcopal. I don't think we've seen him at his best quite yet. He really should be a guy who is uncoverable at that level, who takes over a game. He's a big, big guy in 3A football. I think we'll see a greater role in 2020 for him as an offensive playmaker. I've seen him do some really good things on defense, recover fumbles, bring down the quarterback, demolish offensive linemen. People will see that Florida got a tight end commit, but Nick is a really, really good athlete. You see that from watching him play defense. So interesting kind of commentary there from a well-rounded player. And then Pro Impact Jack 7 vs. 7. He's his 7-on-7 team says big and physical, but still has the ability to be a legit receiver. I think he'll fit in well with Mullen's offense. So, the thought is we haven't seen the best of him, Nick. He can get better. This coming up year, playing in 3A, he's a mismatch for a lot of his size is a mismatch for a lot of teams he plays here in high school here in the Jacksonville area. Doing well in the camp circuit, and hopefully that translates to a bigger senior season from him. Brewster, in this short time, has his second tight end committed in the last 2 weeks and 4 weeks on the job.
There you go. Hope Knox now.
Do
I? go help the other guys. Hey, your class is done. Go. Just send them on the road. Just tag along with the other coaches because your position is locked up and ready. It's interesting. It's so funny. I thought it was so funny when Florida never, you know, like officially announced it, but when Brewster started tweeting that stuff, everyone's clamoring to get unblocked because he's like Kevin Garnett. He's the guy that if he's on your team, you love him. You love him. If he's not on your team, you can't stand that guy. And I think he had half a Gator Twitter blocked because of stuff that they would say to him after, you know, he was tweeting and getting kids and pulling kids. And he was, you know, the big ringleader behind the Dalvin Cook commitment or flip at FSU. And I thought it was hilarious, people trying to get him to unblock him. It looks like he's unblocked a bunch of you guys.
Yeah, I had to.
So that's good. Were you blocked through, Dave?
No, I wasn't blocked, luckily. Okay. I probably should have been, but I guess I'm a little more reserved.
You slipped through the cracks.
Yeah. I'm a little more reserved there. But I had to screenshot some of his tweets just so some of the followers could see it, just because there were so many of them blocked.
And I thought it was so funny. It just kept popping up. It'd be like 5, 6, 7 people a day. Tell Brewster to unblock me. I'm like, no, man, you made your bed. You lay in it. You fired off those tweets that got you blocked. And now you got to sit there and deal with the consequences. But it's incredible. I mean, he's been here for what, a month?
Yeah.
Already locked up two commits to his position. And Dan Mullen said, you know, he just has that electric kind of personality that he's never walked into a room and, you know, left with less friends than when he came in. So I'll be interested to see him and do our first interview with him sometime in the spring and kind of see what makes him tick.
Yeah, a lot of commits or a lot of recruits have brought his name up. As you said, Nick, a lot of other position groups, a lot of position players have brought his name up in interviews since the last couple of days of this Florida Junior Day. So we'll quickly wrap it up with just kind of their big-time targets. The Gators made a great move on. 5-star cornerback Jason Marshall, defensive tackle Leonard Taylor, also on 4-star wide receiver Marcus Burke. And so hopefully also made further strides with highly rated 4-stars defensive end Tamese Adelie, safety Amari Harvey, defensive end Bryce Langston, defensive tackle Desmond Watson. You know, it was a who's who in Gainesville this past weekend, Nick, and the Gators are setting themselves up well for this 2021 class.
Yeah, I mean, the recruiting for 2021 started a long time ago, too, didn't it? I mean, like almost immediately once they got to campus. I mean, well, immediately when they get that coach staff gets to campus, it's like all hands on deck because they've got, you know, 6 weeks to get a recruiting class. But this 2021 class, I feel like at some point might have had more commits than the 2020 class had. And you're starting to see, you know, that pay off now with, you know, I think they're number two, you said, right now behind Ohio State.
Yep. I think one on Rivals and two on 24/7. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that also makes sense. Certainly it helps. You know, when Jim McElwain comes over from Colorado State, he's not recruiting those same kind of players. So he doesn't have the relationships that, you know, an SEC caliber player has. Dan Mullen's coming from Mississippi State. And granted, there's kids that will come to Florida that would not have given Mississippi State the time of day. Mm-hmm. But Dan Mullen coming from the SEC, that's still the quality of kids. So he might have had relationships with these players, the quality of players that they're going to go after at Florida already in this 2021 class. I think you're just seeing it pay off now to have that, you know, going into the third year of the program, you've had success on the field. You're still trending upward.
I don't think it can be overstated, Nick, the coaching changes Dan Mullen made after year one and how far those relationships have went and really kind of this class.
No, absolutely. And not only, I mean, I don't know how good Torian Gray is as a recruiter, but I think his results speak for themselves.
Yeah.
Like, that was one of the moves. And it was kind of like, hey, I don't know if Torian Gray is the guy that you know, closes in the living room. I think he's the guy that closes because you look at the guys he's coached and his success rate of getting guys from college to the pros, and that does his recruiting for him. You've got a guy like Tim Brewster, who I think could sell ice to an Eskimo.
And David Turner's, I mean, kind of seems like that.
Dance moves. But, yeah, David Turner's a closer, too. It might not be the dance moves, but David Turner's a closer, too. And maybe he's another guy, you know, kind of like Torian Gray, where his results speak for himself. And look at the guys that he's coached in the league and in college and guys that in college that went to the league. And it's a really, really good and impressive coaching staff. I think both on the field and off the field.
Yeah. And behind the scenes recruiting staff has been retooled as well, you know, within the last year or so. So, I think It was a hard lesson, I think, for Mullen to begin with right here at Florida, but he quickly remedied it by getting the right coaches on staff and the right recruiting support staff there. So it looks like this 2021 class is bearing that fruit. So, all right, Nick, man, as you said, we're recording on a Monday night, so you got FSU, Florida baseball on Tuesday, and Georgia, Florida baseball during the weekend, and covering some Gator basketball in between there.
Man. You just said Florida State, Florida, and Georgia, Florida.
Yeah.
You better get roasted for that. You better get roasted for that. You got to know that.
I was just thinking of the team Florida had to play.
Know who the audience is and say it in the correct order, Dave.
When I'm talking about the Florida-Georgia game now, it is.
I don't even know if that's how you would say it normally. I think you're just putting it on a show right now because you've been called out.
You might have caught me there. But all that good stuff at Gator Country this week.
I'm looking forward to it. And then basketball up in Nashville.
No. But you're not making a trip up there, right?
I love Nashville, but I will not be there. Yeah, I gotta be here for baseball. Gotta be here for baseball and football will be starting too. So I don't know. I don't know if I get up to Nashville and back before, you know, Monday and with the start of spring practice.
Yeah, hopefully the coronavirus doesn't keep us away.
Florida just today said the UF, not the UAA.
Yeah.
They recommended that all in-person classes be done online. Now, it's not mandatory. It's just a recommendation. I haven't heard anything from the University Athletic Association, but then I'm thinking, like, man, are Florida and Georgia going to play a baseball game in front of just the media in the press box this weekend? Yeah. Or do you start getting, you know, all these open practices that football have, but for an opportunity for the fans is to get to a point where it's, hey, all practices closed. We can't, only essential personnel.
Yeah, I think, probably definitely worth keeping an eye on because I know the NBA is even talking about just doing that. So I think if you see the NBA go that way, I think you'll start seeing colleges.
The entire country of Italy is on quarantine. The whole country.
Yeah, it's crazy. So it might, you know, some of you might label it as an overreaction, but I think it's at least looking out for to kind of see where all this stuff breaks down. So
can you imagine an empty swamp for a spring game?
Oh man, no. As long as they televise it, I guess we're okay. But that would stink.
Yeah.
So got to get the tailgating in.
Yeah, we're outside tailgating. Not gonna let us in, but we'll be outside drinking beer.
Yeah, exactly. So, Nick, man, thank you much. As everybody, you can follow Nick at GatorCountry.com. Follow him on Twitter as well at Nick De La Torre GC. Anything else, Nick?
I'm all good. Thanks for having me on, and look forward to getting back on whenever you ask. Now that Will Salmon's gone, maybe I'll be on the show more.
Throwing me some shade.
No, it's all good.
Definitely get you on more, man. All right, Nick De La Torre from GatorCountry.com. I'm the host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SBC. You guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.